This episode of Fermented Adventure the Podcast is sponsored by Brewskits, handcrafted dog treats made from spent beer grains, oats, barley, and rye. No chemical preservatives, a great source of fiber, and packed with protein. Visit brewskits.com to see the full selection of treats for your dog and your cat. Receive 15% off, no minimum purchase, on your first order by typing in lowercase FA2024 at checkout. Cheers! Hello, ladies and gentlemen, craft spirit enthusiasts, and those interested in the intoxicating world of craft distilleries, cideries, meaderies, wineries, and the occasional foray into breweries. It's Rich Shane, and welcome to Fermented Adventure, the podcast, where we bring you the fascinating people that are making the mash, fermenting, distilling, bottling, pouring, and delivering to you some of the finest libations in the world. Before we get started, here are a few housekeeping items. Thank you for bringing the podcast into wherever you are and whatever you're doing. We truly are grateful that you have chosen to listen and make us part of your day. It would mean the world to us if you left a 5-star review. This helps us climb in the rankings, and it makes it easier for others to find us. Don't hesitate to leave us your comments as well. If the podcast didn't meet your expectations, tell us why. We're always striving to improve. You can find us at fermentedadventure.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook as Fermented Adventure. Email us at fermentedadventure@gmail.com. All right, FA Nation, let's meet our guests. He's Chris Tunstall. I'm Rich Shane. This is Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Shane, thank you so much for having me, man. I love being on podcasts, and I'm really, really excited about this.
A bar above. We're going to talk a lot of things, cocktails, bars, mixology. We're going to see where this conversation goes, but we're going to start it out with a bar above. How did all that get started?
Yeah, so it's a long story. So I started tending bar way back in like 2003, and I love cocktails. I was going to school for molecular biology, so I have this head in science. But once I got behind the bar, it just kind of everything clicked. I'm very creative. I love culinary. And I was a craft dealer in Las Vegas. So I love the excitement of being behind a bar. So when I moved to California, I had to kind of get that excitement somewhere. And I was like, you know, I want to be a bartender. Those guys are always cool. And I'm the biggest dork in the world. So that can only help me. So I got into bartending and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I got really excited about mixology, which is a brand new topic back in 2003 of utilizing fresh juices and really starting to not only make cocktails, but to design cocktails. So I kind of went into a deep dive into all things mixology. At that time, there was 10 people total in the United States really exploring these topics, 5 in New York, 5 in like California, San Francisco, basically. And we knew who each other were. So I really tried to gain as much knowledge as I possibly could around all things cocktail design. And then I started creating my own cocktails and running bar programs. And I did that for about 15 years. And I absolutely loved it. And so then I was up in Northern California, up in Napa doing this. And I always knew that San Francisco was a place I wanted to be. So I finally got a chance to go there and start to bartend. And I thought I knew a lot. I thought I knew, you know, the ideas and the physical process of bartending and the theories of making cocktails. And it wasn't until I moved to San Francisco that I realized that I didn't know anything. The cutting edge was so far ahead of what I was doing that if you were not in San Francisco and if you were not in New York, you just didn't get access to the kind of information that was available. And at that time, it was very much a kind of insulated environment. If you weren't in that inside, then you weren't given access to that information. So I found it very frustrating when I got into that environment. And there was a lot of attitude back then about the word mixology. And it's a loaded word. And there's a lot of, you know, people that have a lot of animosity towards that word for good reason. So back then, it was basically somebody that was better than a bartender. That was the word and what it meant. And the attention was really on the bartender instead of the customer. So there's where a lot of the kind of negative connotation of the word started. And I felt that as well. So for example, when I was tending bar, they would say, hey, do me a favor, make me an old fashioned. And I would make it and they're like, you're doing it wrong. But then they wouldn't tell you how to do it right. And so I found that extremely frustrating. And I was like, you know, I don't know if I can cuss on this, but I'll, you know, I threw up my middle finger. I'm like, dude, I don't like this, man. This is not cool. If you're going to tell me I'm doing it wrong, you got to tell me how to do it right.
Why would you set somebody up for failure when the end goal is towards the customer and their experience and satisfaction?
This is where the whole negative connotation towards mixology really started, right? Because it was all about them being better than their customers and providing this unusual cocktail experience that didn't exist before then. You know, a couple hundred years ago it did, but currently in our generation, it didn't exist. So there was this idea that they had to be better for some reason. So it was this really negative space. And so when I got into it, I was like, this is terrible. You guys are doing, like, I don't like being a part of this, and I don't like being like perpetuating this environment. So then I was like, okay, if you're not part of this in crowd, you're not getting access to this information. So then that's when we got the idea, my wife and I, of starting the YouTube channel, to sharing cutting edge cocktail techniques, to showing best practices and communicating that to the entire world for anybody that really is interested in this field. And I think we were one of the very first in our space to do that. There were a couple other people that were doing a really great job, but some of it was really perpetuating that negative stereotype. So we wanted to be accessible and we wanted to be open. And that's kind of where we started. We started with education and giving people access to this information. So that was back in 2013. Since then, we've started a Facebook group. We've started a podcast. We started another Facebook group. Our claim to fame is we were actually, my wife and I were on a Super Bowl commercial for Facebook. For craft cocktails, there's like a half a second we're on there, and I'm kind of angry holding a pineapple in the background. But yeah,
you're the angry room. Pineapple guy.
That's me.
It's my, I knew I recognized you. If I didn't blink, I wouldn't have seen you.
Pretty much. Yep, exactly. So we've kind of lived in this space for a very long time, really focused on a community, making this accessible information, and really giving some of the best information out there from a theoretical perspective. And back in 2016, we kept getting the question of like, you know, what bar tool do you recommend? What bar tool do you recommend? And we've been getting it since 2013. And then, you know, once again, I hated a lot of the barware that was out in the world because it was cheap, or the customer service sucked. So I was like, oh, this is terrible. My wife was like, look, stop your bitching, man. Just fix the damn problem. So that's kind of where the barware started back in 2016. And ever since then, it's been kind of the cornerstone of our business, is developing really high-end barware that is extra functional, extra durable, that really does serve our community. So that's kind of my form of customer service, is creating really, really fantastic bar tools that won't fail on a Friday night. So that's kind of where we kind of are now. We've done a lot of education. We have a mixology certification. We do a lot of training through our website. But yeah, 200 episodes of podcasts. You know, probably that many at least YouTube videos, and everything that you can imagine. We've been there and done that at some point.
Brewskits, beer, grain, dog bones. Brewskits, your dog will go wild. Brewskits, beer, grain, dog bones, a healthy alternative for your pup.
Brewskits are all natural and made in the USA. Visit brewskit.com. That's brewskit.com.
All right, just with all that, Chris, I feel like what we've done is we've allowed you to go through the index or the bibliography of all that we're going to talk about today, because you created a whole outline of the world that is for you and your wife, Julia, that this has been for the last 20 years, a passion project, an experience, a business, all those things that just came out of, hey, dude, you're making it wrong. That old fashioned you're making is wrong. Now, I have a question. Yeah. How were you making it wrong?
Well, there's a lot of different ways. So, and this is kind of one of the approaches that we always take is, you know, drink what you like. So I think way back in 2003, I think the way I was making a old fashioned, I was muddling. So I had an orange, I had a cherry, and I was muddling them. And obviously, you know, things have progressed since then, and most people make it a very different way, but in certain parts of the country, they still make it that way. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's still a delicious cocktail. But when you're in that world of craft cocktails or mixology, they are looking at every single detail. That's the difference that that world is really all about. And so that was kind of what I came into, was like, okay, I know how to make a cocktail. but I don't know how to do it properly. Even the build sequence has to be very specific. So you can get as deep and as nerdy and granular as you want to, but at the end of the day, if you're not making something that's tasty, what's the point? And everybody's version of tasty is different, right? So then they were saying, yeah, you're doing it wrong, but then they wouldn't educate me on what I was doing wrong. So that was kind of like the starting point. A lot of my story about A Bar Above really does come from frustration. And that was the match that lit the whole can. It's like, all right, you know, fingers in the air, like, this is it. I hate you guys. We're going to do things differently. And I'm going to be the person that does it. So
you come on the scene in those early 2000s, consistent with when the whole Mad Men culture started and where I believe we got back into the idea of craft cocktails. And that created a curiosity for, well, the home bar again.
Right.
And going out to a cocktail bar and experiencing, as you said, look, if it doesn't taste good, it doesn't drink well, if it's not put together properly, then what's it all about?
Right. Yeah.
You're also, to me, coming on to this whole world where you're around the same time when craft spirits are starting to come of age.
Right.
That experience to meld those two, what was that like for you?
It was pretty crazy. So I started tending bar back in 2003, and I can remember the amount of gins. I could count them on one hand. There were five. So that's what we had access to. Same thing, like rye wasn't even a conversation. And brown spirits in general weren't a conversation. It was all about vodka and flavored vodka at that time. So when we take a look at that timeline of kind of like the evolution of craft cocktails, mixology, whatever you want to call it, it really is about flavor and delivering a better cocktail. So as we start to grow through our evolution, you know, Grey Goose was kind of a cornerstone when I started tending bar. Then we started to look at other spirits, and then rye whiskey started to boom, and bourbon started to boom, and gin started to blow up. And there was a point, I remember, that you couldn't even buy a rye. Like, you just couldn't get it, because everybody was buying rye because it was the new hot spirit. And it hadn't been a hot spirit for 30 years or 50 years. So the demand wasn't there. And then all of a sudden it was. So as you know, to many of the conversations you probably have, that can't happen overnight. Like, getting rye into a bar is years away from production to bottling to distribution. So we had to, the industry from the spirit side and the craft spirit side really had to ramp up very, very quickly. And there was some spirits that really didn't make that happen. Rittenhouse was one of the ones that we absolutely loved. It was in our well, it was, you know, 90 proof, and it was delicious. And then we ran out. So we had to start looking around. And the person that came to answer that call was Bullet. So then Bullet blew up and they started producing a rye. And then all these other people started producing ryes. So we started to see these smaller distilleries. Koval is a great example of this, that really started to make some really fantastic spirits. And that gave us, as bartenders and mixologists, a whole different palette to paint with, right? We have new flavors that we never had. We had new expressions of spirits that we'd never had before. So now that old fashioned that we made, you know, now it pops. Now that rye comes singing through, it's nice and dry, but then that sugar comes in and gives it some weight and some balance to it. And then the aromatics of the bitters start to come in, and it really gives us this whole different culinary experience that literally was not possible before. And then we started taking a lot of those techniques that are in the world of distilling and fermentation and bringing them back into the bar. So then we started doing barrel-aged cocktails. We started using mash buildouts to build syrups. Like, we can get very, very creative depending on the level and expertise and the knowledge and the passion of the person behind the bar. So I love it. I think it's fantastic. And I will say that in the beginning, the spirits were pretty terrible. They were really, really rough, man, because they're just, people got to cut their teeth. You know, they got to figure out barrel aging. They got to figure out what works for their brand. They got to figure out their identity, and that takes time. Now a lot of people have done that, but it just is this growing pain that you have to get through. And I'm really, really excited about some of the spirits that are out in the market now. There's some killer, killer just examples of fantastic spirits.
In speaking with you, Chris, I feel like I'm talking to a living history witness of the bar world, mixology, the craft spirit industry. I mean, that's if you haven't written a book yet about that, and you did, I apologize. I didn't see that in your whole biography. But I think really where you're coming from is that's that, hey, we need to understand where we've come from so we can understand where we are and where we're going with the world of what we're putting in a glass.
Right. And I think there's a lot of people that have done that conversation and had those books. And I find it very interesting, like being on the inside of that track and that story and seeing how things evolve has been really interesting and really insightful to me. Like back in 2003, when I was attending bar, I knew that this fresh juice culinary explosion was going to be a thing. I knew there was no turning back from that. So that's why I really leaned into it. And I saw the opportunity that existed there. If you would have told me this is where we would end up now, 20 years ago, I would have said there's no way in hell. I mean, this is a worldwide conversation now. Like anybody that wants to create these really delicious cocktails, there's no reason you can't. And we're starting to see some really interesting and really innovative techniques that are being applied behind the bar. And it's just mind blowing. And this is kind of the cornerstone of our education and our belief system of like, we will give you the framework in order to have these conversations in a very intelligent way, but it's your creativity that's really going to push you and your cocktails to the next level. So we'll give you the information, show us what you can do. And it's pretty amazing to see what people can do and how they can really figure out the puzzle pieces when it comes to cocktails and plug in ingredients. And it's just, it's super cool.
You speak to puzzle pieces and ingredients and cocktails. You're coming to us from California. And at one point in time, the tiki culture was huge all over the country. California, it's seeing its renaissance now. And some of what they did was with syrups, with, you know, mixes of alcohols. And this, to my point, as far as what you were saying in the beginning about your early experience, those bottles may not have been labeled except for the word A on it. They never shared what the ingredients were, the recipes. Only one or two people held that recipe and they wouldn't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. And how do you deconstruct that or how do you reconstruct that to make that amazing cocktail? So that was probably part of that history and experience that maybe you ran into or what we're even still seeing. If a bartender knows, hey, I've got this, and I say bartender because that's what is the preference to be called.
Sure.
If that bartender doesn't want anybody to know what's in that, you know, special something or other, they're not going to tell anybody. That's my bottle. It's labeled A or, you know, C for Chris. Those are my cocktails. Hands off, right?
Right. And that's part of the history of mixology and kind of looking back to where we were to where we are now, right? Like that conversation about tiki is extremely relevant to to craft cocktails. I actually did an interview with Beach Bum Berry, who is like the Indiana Jones of tiki. Like he's the guy that knows everything there is to know about tiki. So him and I had this conversation of like where tiki sits in the world of craft cocktails. And he had a really interesting perspective on this. And he said that craft cocktails actually comes from tiki. And I'm like, come on, man, this seems a little self-serving being that this is your focus, right? And he's like, let me explain it to you. Tiki started as kind of the first cocktail that came out of Prohibition. All that institutional knowledge that was baked into the United States, they left or they took on new jobs and soda fountains and, you know, they moved to Paris and they moved to Cuba. They left. There was no education from the bar world after Prohibition. Obviously, World War I, World War II happened, all that stuff. We get the influences of Polynesian culture, all that stuff. So when we take a look at tiki cocktails, they're using fresh ingredients. They're making their own syrups. They're doing really elaborate split-based cocktails. They are the OG of craft cocktails. We forgot about that. That just died in the world of classic cocktails. And so looking back, we know that, okay, let's look back there and see what we can resurrect in here. And so seeing the Renaissance and kind of this revitalization of tiki, and it's been happening for probably 15, 20 years that I know of. You know, you have a bunch of really cool places in San Francisco that, you know, that brought this back. You see all these cool places popping up left, right, and center. because they are really fantastic cocktails. They're tried true recipes. But to your point, you know, back then they did have their secret recipes, and they carried that forward with the mixology trend as well, because that was their competitive advantage. Once those recipes got out into the world, then we saw the exact same thing that happened with tiki, is you get these knockoff places that don't respect, or they don't understand the cocktail culture, the ingredients, the care that goes into the balance of a cocktail. And so they are serving craft cocktails in a very diminished capacity, but charging top tier pricing, right? So that's one of the ways that they protected that in the beginning, for the tiki and the craft cocktail movement. And I think now, you know, the knowledge of tiki and the knowledge of craft cocktails is so ubiquitous that there are many places that are doing a really fantastic job with the cocktails. They know all the history, and people are really passionate about creating these awesome, awesome experiences for their guests. So I think it's just part of the growing pains that we have to go through for an industry, and that will always be a problem. But I think there's so much good information out there that if you see something, you could probably, with the right knowledge and training, replicate that in some capacity. So I don't know if I actually answered your question.
No, you did. I mean, look, you and I could geek out on this and get into the weeds on this, because I you talk about a conversation, and then that leads to how it applies and where the history of that cocktail comes from. And we learn. That's why I love this fermented adventure. I learn. Somebody like you, I mean, if I had hair on the back of my neck, you'd see it stands up, but you know, I'm challenged on that. It's okay. You talk about knowledge, Chris. Mm-hmm. Your website, you're bringing the knowledge. You're bringing the experience. You've got little classes that you can teach somebody on just a small mixology part of the world, all the way up to certification. And this is part of you saying, I guess, between you and Julia, we got to fix this. We've got to provide this for the world, so we probably expand people's minds, horizons, abilities to become more appreciative of cocktails. Talk about just everything you know you can do. If I saw, I can do a whole certification and become a bartender right from your, and I think that's great, that especially that we come out of this home bar COVID thing. So everybody thinks they're the bartender, right? And then they want to go work in some place and they're going, hey, you're doing it wrong. But I saw that on a YouTube video. I don't know what video you're watching. You provide a certification. Talk about that.
Yeah. So we've kind of took the certification, and I had this in my head for a long time. And when I met my wife, Julia, at the time, I kind of told her about the idea of a bar above. And she's like, okay, cool. Let's talk about how you're going to make money at it. And I'm like, what? And so the only thing relevant at the time, and how this information was being distributed before I did this, was DVD box sets. So back in the day, if you were a Flair bartender, famous Flair bartender, you released a DVD box set on training videos on how to do this. And I told her that. And she was like, yeah, man, no, that's not going to happen anymore. And this is back in 2008, 2009 when I met her.
Did she say anything about the 8-track cassette player you had in the car either?
She did. And she's 10 years younger than me, so it hits a little hard, right? Like, oh God, that's brutal. But she was like, look, you know, why don't we give her information away for free? And I was like, wait, what? And she's like, look, build an audience and then, you know, give this information, establish trust, and then we can build out some kind of training program at the back end of that. And I'm like, okay, I'm here for it. Let's do it. So that's kind of how it all started. So the mixology certification was this, it's a huge, like just a brain dump of all the trials and tribulations that I had. I probably have thrown away 1,000 cocktails up to this point. Just trial and error. Like I have a flavor combination in my head. I don't know how to express this in liquid form. So 15 years behind the bar, I've thrown away a lot of booze and I've learned a lot of hard lessons. So it's a distillation of all that to create an architecture of creating a cocktail. From a vision of flavors to execution. And so what we do is a 9-week course. It's no joke. It's a long course. And we go and take a very, very deep dive into every avenue, every variable inside of the cocktail. So for example, like the old fashioned, it is made up, it is the OG cocktail. So we have spirit, We have whiskey, typically. We have sugar, a sweetener of some form, and we have bitters. And then we have water. That's the formula for a cocktail. So then I take every single one of those variables and I go down the rabbit hole about what are your variables that you can plug into this. The margarita is another great example, or sour and whiskey sour. You have spirit, whiskey, you have an acid, which is typically lemon, and you have a sweetener, which is typically simple syrup. But every one of those variables, spirit, acid, sweetener, you can go down an absolute rabbit hole. And that's exactly what we do in this course, in the certification. So when we pinpoint those, let's say lemon, it's our acid. We take a step above and say, instead of lemon, it's acid. What other ingredients are in the world of acid that can be applied to cocktails? So then we say, okay, well, Meyer lemons, regular lemons, limes, Tahitian limes, Persian limes, sweet limes, like Kaffir limes, like we go down an absolute rabbit hole, trying to identify everything that was available at that time. And then we talk about what is the sugar content of those ingredients.
Chris, I don't do this often, but I'm going to stop you a short sentence and say, we should have had cocktails in front of us today because you're making me thirsty, man.
Why right, are you doing exactly. That? but yeah, so the certification is just this deep dive. And so we go to the granular level on every aspect of a cocktail and provide you with the best information. So the lemon is one conversation, pH, acid, sweetener, what does that profile look like? But then we go the next level down, like what are some of the alternate acids out there? Like verjus, it's an unripened grape juice they use in cooking in France that has a high pH. Vinegar has a high pH. You could utilize those in cocktails. Now we have a conversation about refined acids. So if, for example, you have citric acid, tartaric acid, malic acid, you can add those into other ingredients so that it punches the same as a lemon or lime. But now you have the flavor profile of Bordeaux, right? So now you have this red wine margarita that hits like a margarita, but you have all this new flavor that's coming into it. And we do that with every single ingredient through the entire course. Same thing with sugars, all the way down to the grades of maple syrups and how they express themselves differently in a cocktail. So we take this like micro look at every ingredient, grab all the ingredients, and then we talk about cocktail families. So you have this background information on all the ingredients, and now you can do things like substitute ingredients, split-based cocktails, and like tiki, and adding some new techniques on top of that in order to achieve this really like esoteric style cocktail that you've imagined, but now you have the information and now you know the techniques in order to execute that. So like I said, it's a 9-week deep dive into all things cocktail. It has a final exam, it has tests along the way. And at the very end, you have to produce a cocktail and evolve it 3 times, 3 different techniques. And somebody on the opposite end of that grades it and gives you a grade. So it's probably one of the most professional certifications when it comes to mixology, and we're constantly the top education when it comes to that from liquor.com, I think for 5 years now, something like that. So, but then we also have other education, like a deep dive into the world of syrups. So if you want to talk
about- You do syrups, you do infusions. I mean, this is a real treasure trove of information that you've got to be exploring. And I look at the prices, they're super reasonable to what value you're providing. I mean, I'm listening to you talk right now, and it's like, you know, let's just sit down and start making. You can't see on the podcast, he's got about 70 bottles behind him. We're just going to make cocktails. So you've got all these things on your website, the syrups, the infusions, you're offering an education to them. Pardon the interruption. Thank you so much for listening to Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Could you do us a favor? Hit that follow button. It makes it easier for others to find us, and it helps us climb in the rankings. Take a screenshot of the podcast, post it, tag us, and let everyone know that you listen to the Fermented Adventure podcast. Now, back to our podcast.
Right. And I mean, we're constantly expanding our education portfolio as well as our bar tools. So like we're launching a bitters and infusion course probably in the next couple of weeks. And then we're going to move on to the next course and the next course, because we just love this information. We love sharing these techniques. And the way we do these, we have a flavor manipulation series. The syrups, the infusions, and the bitters are all kind of in that series. And so we kind of hold your hand in the beginning. We show you what's possible, like basic stuff. and then we take you off the cliff. And we go really, really deep as far as all these things go to show you what the effect on the final cocktail is going to be. So really like try to expand your mind about what is possible with these techniques. So
I can't wait to have that Thelma and Louise experience with you, Chris.
Come on over, baby. We'll drive right off that cliff.
As a molecular biologist, you're bringing an aspect to mixology as the bartender that I think that experience you talk about. All right, we talk about this with gin and botanicals quite often, that that flavor may not be pronounced of that botanical and that other flavor may not be pronounced. But what happens is when they come together, they create a flavor.
Oh, absolutely.
Is brought about, but is not part of the component of either. And all that those botanicals are in there to do is create this one flavor profile or take away maybe some of that acid or the pH, or those are things that I can have on a molecular biology level conversation with you that is way above my degree.
And mine too, I'll be completely honest. But it is really fascinating when we start to talk about flavors and techniques and application of spirits and stuff. There's a lot of things that you can do to really reinforce flavors, to accentuate flavors, to add new flavors in. And this is what really got me interested in the world of cocktails. Because, you know, I went through the SOM certification. I have my first level SOM. And I find it really fascinating. When you get that magic food pairing, it just sings. There's nothing like it in the world. So then I said, okay, all that stuff in the wine, that's cool. But that's cooked. That's baked into that bottle. With mixology, we have the ability to add new flavors into this, to use any ingredient across any culinary discipline, bring it into our world, and put it in a glass. And to me, that gives me so much more creative freedom, right? And I love wine, and I will always love wine. But when it comes to creativity, I think cocktails are it. I mean, you could put anything in that glass in some way, and it will absolutely sing. So,
you mentioned barware, you mentioned bar tools several times, and you talked about the quality or the availability. And you have created your own line of barware. Talk about, you know, your mindset for that and what you're providing that makes it an even higher level bartending experience.
Yeah, so we take a very similar approach that we do with our courses as our barware. We identify all the variables. And like I said, my claim to fame is something I lead with everybody I talk to with bar tools is I've broken everything there is to break behind the bar. And my wife got tired of hearing me, you know, complain about it. So we fix those problems. And with me, my focus has always been on customer service. That is where my brain is. It's where I excel. I love delivering an experience that is well beyond what people expect. And I find that bar companies, bar tool companies in general, you know, they serve a community of bartenders, of hospitality professionals. That's their job of creating these experiences for people. But they don't give that same level of customer service to the people buying their tools. They're actually, most of them are pretty terrible. So when we approach our company, customer service is always at the forefront of our mind. If you text us, if you call us, if you email us, we're going to get back to you as fast as we possibly can because we know what it's like to be on the other end of that. But when it comes to tool design, this is my form of customer service. If your tool breaks in your hand on a Friday night, that's ours. I've done a terrible job on my end of producing quality barware for you. That's a fault in customer service. So that's the way I approach tool design. So whenever we design a tool, it may look like any other tool on the marketplace, but there is certain aspects of that tool that have been very carefully thought about. And it is a much more durable tool and usually a much more functional tool. And you can't see that on a website. But once I give it to a bartender and they put it in their hands and I describe the differences, that's when I have a customer for life. They get it. They understand it. And it's because of my frustration with other companies, with other bar tools that have really fueled a focus on quality and durability in our bar tools. So, for example, our cocktail shakers. When you take a look at a standard cocktail shaker, at the bottom, there's a weight. I'll have one here. I'll describe it real quick. And this is just a really good example of kind of the level of detail that we provide in all of our tools. But when you have a standard cocktail shaker, there's three dots at the bottom where the weight is welded onto the actual shaker. That's the weighted shaker. That is usually the point of failure. So those three weights or those three pins are just tack welds, and they hold it on there. And a cocktail shaker goes through a lot of abuse during the day, right? You bang them together, you make a bunch of cocktails, and eventually what's going to happen is that weight's going to fall off or water's going to get in there and it's going to rust it out and it's going to be kind of gross. So what we've done is we actually weld all the way around. We seal the whole weight onto the shaker and it's never going to come off unless you use a saw of some form. So that is one way that we ensure that this happens. We actually offer two different shakers. One is weighted, and this is for high speed for craft cocktail bars that just pump through volume. The other one is in a large weighted shaker and a smaller unweighted shaker on top. And this is specifically for egg white cocktails, because when you shake egg whites, what happens is pressure builds up inside of the cocktail shaker and it breaks your seal. And all of a sudden you're wearing egg whites halfway through your shift and it sucks. So the weighted shaker provides rigidity to the whole structure. This point here reinforces the shaker all the way through. When you have the unweighted shaker, you have flexibility. So what that does, it can, the unweighted shaker conforms to the weighted shaker, creating a tighter seal. So that way it doesn't pop open when you shake egg white cocktails. It's a little bit harder to open up, but it is much more functional from an egg white perspective. So we take this level of care through every single one of the products that we offer. And because I know what it's like to have crappy barware on a Friday night. So yeah, it's something I'm extremely passionate about, just like with the education, is producing some of the best barware you can buy. And yeah.
I knew for me, this conversation was going to be informative. I had no idea I was going to learn. I just got a PhD in a bar shaker, and it's going to have me looking at those bar shakers with a little different perspective than I did before, just sitting at the bar. And now I got to figure out which bar shakers I have. Do I have the weighted, unweighted, weighted? I had no idea. That is so incredible. And I'm thinking, as you're explaining this, Chris, look, I come from a culinary background. You know, when you walk in the kitchen, you're bringing your own knives. You're bringing your own set of tools. And I've never had the idea that as a bartender, if you come to your shift, you're bringing your own tools. And I wonder how many bartenders are doing that, just like their own syrups, infusions, or the like. But to me, if you're that kind of dedicated mixologist, bartender, you're going to want to come with your own kit. You're not going to want to reach for that, as you said, on a Friday night, making an egg white, something or other. You don't want to go home looking like, you know, you drank everything that you made. You wear everything you made. Now that's amazing. So just even from the cocktail shaker, you're refining, you're elevating, you're creating quality and a level of confidence for somebody that's using your tools.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we do this across every single one of the tools that we release. If it is an average tool, we probably won't release it because it's already exists in the marketplace. So whenever we think about a tool, whenever we design a tool, it's like, okay, well, where are the pain points of this specific tool? How can we fix it? And not only that, but how can we elevate it beyond that? So, you know, like I said, when you look at our catalog, it may look like every other tool on the marketplace, but there is something about that specific tool that is better, more durable, more functional in some regards. Like even the coating that's on this shaker that I'm showing, it's a gold-plated shaker. This is a very different coating than what's in the marketplace. So typically what you see on, I'm not going to name names, but all the other competitors, is that there is a plastic coating on the outside. Like your Moscow Mule cups, for example, is a classic plating process that happens in pretty much all barware. It's nickel, physical layer of nickel. Then you put the plating on top of that, chrome, brass, whatever it is you want, gold. And then you put resin or plastic on top of that. When you put it in a dishwasher, it eats through that plastic and all of a sudden it looks janky. And then the oxidation begins underneath it with the material. And anybody that has Moscow Mule cups, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So the coating that we offer in here is high temperature dishwasher safe. And if you're at a home bar, this is going to go through your dishwasher, no problem. But the plating is cooked into the metal. So even if you, even if it wears out, the only thing that's going to shine through is the stainless, and it's still going to be a presentable piece versus the plastic one you're probably going to have to throw away because it looks so gross. So like all the little details about the tools that we produce are, yeah, not your typical bar tool.
You got the barware, the tools, the classes, all of that. What do you see on the horizon as far as some cocktail trends, things that may be starting, maybe you're on the West Coast, things that we might see come East Coast? You mentioned fresh fruit and juices a bit ago, but what are you seeing right now? To what's what you got your ear to the ground? What are you hearing?
Well, I think we're in a weird place in the world of cocktails right now because COVID, it wiped out our industry. All of the institutional knowledge that we had kind of got thrown out the window, right? These people that were really passionate about cocktails in a bar setting, they all left. They all found different jobs because they couldn't pay their bills. So we're in this weird place where we're ramping people up and people aren't as excited about being in the hospitality now because of what they experienced in COVID. But the other thing that we see is that during COVID, people still wanted to drink. So a lot of home enthusiasts really started leaning in on learning about cocktails. So we saw this renaissance in the home bartender and people getting knowledge about making cocktail, entertaining, crafting cocktails, and that community as well. So the thing that I'm seeing is, and maybe this is more aspirational and hopeful than reality, but people are becoming a lot more passionate about what they're drinking, about creating and crafting their own cocktails and the education around it. So this is going to trickle into craft spirits without a doubt. Like quality, we can see starts to matter when you start crafting your own cocktails at home because it translates into your cocktail. So we're probably going to see a boom like we did during COVID on really nice craft spirits. Good value for money spirits, ones that are kind of workhorses in the world of cocktails, but still enjoyable to sip on as well. As far as like spirits and trends in spirits, I think, the world, Mexican spirits in general they're killing it. Like anything in the mezcal world, it's still on trend. Sotal, Bacanora, there's a lot of different spirits out in the world. The world of gin, like Baja gin is killing it. You and I talked about that a little bit. So I think Mexico and South American spirits are definitely something I would look into. I still think that rums are one of the most underrated spirits on the market. There's a lot of great rums in the world. And from a price point perspective, it's much more approachable than like a single malt scotch. So there's a lot of really fun stuff out in the world right now. Liqueurs are blown up. Everybody's trying to recreate the next green chartreuse because you can't get it anymore. So we're going to see what happens with those Alpine style spirits. And Amari is always going to be, I think, there's no looking back when it comes to Amari because it just has so much profound flavor. They're so versatile when it comes to just enjoying in a glass, but also using those in cocktails because they pack so much flavor. And I think RTDs, ready to drinks, there's a lot of really great people in the world that know a lot about creating and crafting cocktails that are applying that knowledge into the RTD space. So there's a lot of good stuff in there. And I think the one I'm most excited about, and this is really relevant to where we are in this podcast in January, is the non-alcoholic side.
Are you looking at my notes, Chris? I don't make too many notes, but right. That was my point. Look, you talk about all these spirits and all these things that have been created, but now we're in this whole dry January idea, and you've got a class, you're teaching about the, non-alcoholic dry January cocktails and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, last year they hit it hard in January. This year they're probably going to explode it. I think non-alcoholic is here to stay. And it's very exciting. It gives us new tools in our tool belt from a hospitality perspective, including people. So you don't be that person on the sideline not able to drink or for whatever reason you choose not to drink. I think it's a fantastic idea. I love it and I fully embrace it. So I think that's not going anywhere and I hope it doesn't. We went to a bar in San Diego 2 weeks ago and they asked us, do you want that alcoholic or non-alcoholic? And it blew my mind. and we ordered a non-alcoholic, and it was freaking delicious.
Well, you mentioned that. I mean, we entertained for New Year's, and right. we had some, obviously, that know to come to the house and drink whatever they want, and I'm making cocktails, and then we have invited people that are now, I didn't know you weren't drinking anymore. So, right. you know, for me, what you bring to this conversation is I need to start to go and educate myself and be able to make some of these non-alcoholic cocktails so they can feel included, they can enjoy in the experience. And look, everybody's holding cocktails. Now, I don't want you to just hold a bottle of water or some seltzer or some club soda. You know, there's plenty of stuff I can learn and up my game. And that's where I think that's appreciated right now. And the idea that you go to a bar and somebody says, you know, would you like that alcoholic or non-alcoholic? You are taken aback.
Right. Yeah. And like for you, you know, you love to entertain, you have people over and all that stuff. And one of the ways I really start to incorporate non-alcoholic is to really target my ABV. Like you can do session margaritas by dropping down that ABV by including a non-alcoholic tequila in there, cutting it down, you know, that alcohol to like 25% of the original cocktail, still having that punch, that flavor, that thing that alcohol brings to a cocktail. But now I can drink four of them because those four are one cocktail. So it really does change the conversation around culinary cocktails and enjoying those drinks and stuff. So it's incredible. I love it. And I hope it doesn't go anywhere. I hope it just gets better from here on out.
It's fascinating. I'd love to, you know, revisit that, who knows, down the road to see what has been just what's evolving in that space. Right. And as more of these producers come online, as you said, with those low ABV spirits and such yeah. like that.
Yep.
You've probably experienced so many bars. I know you make a lot of cocktails and such at your home, but on those times when you are out and about and you want to have somebody make a cocktail, are there bars that you want to just say, that's one I want to go to because they are just making the cocktails far beyond anything anybody's making?
Well, I think there's definitely a handful of them out there that are just to the next level when it comes to that kind of experience. But I think even like in your area, in everybody's area, there's probably a really great craft bar that's just killing it. They're doing a great job. They're making phenomenal cocktails. They're putting a lot of thought into delivering that customer experience. So you don't need to go out of your way to find these places. They exist. And the people behind those bars are extremely passionate about making those cocktails and delivering that kind of experience to you. You know, you don't have to get on a plane to experience these things. So if it were me, I would just look at your Yelp. I would look at Google, at, you know, anywhere.
And I feel like you're avoiding the question, Chris.
Well, so if it's me and if I'm going out, you know, I'm probably just going to enjoy the atmosphere more than a cocktail, because I've done that. I've done the world of cocktails. I'm very familiar with it. So I'm probably just going to enjoy the company of the bartender. We're going to have a great conversation, and I'm probably going to order a beer. If I go out to a specific cocktail bar and I'm looking to have a great cocktail experience, I'm going to choose something on their menu. I'm going to have a conversation with them and I'm going to ask them what they're excited about. You know, you have to build up to that. You just can't say that. Like, hey, what do you want to drink? I don't know. What are you excited about? Because that's a terrible, you're not giving them a lot. So you need to build that rapport. You need to let them know that you're educated in the world of cocktails. And once you establish that relationship, then you can have those conversations with them. Like, dude, what are you drinking these days? Like, what are you making? What are you excited about? Because I want to experience the world of cocktails through your eyes. That's why I'm here. And so, like, there's a lot of great places I can do that. And there's a lot of great places I can go to the nth degree. I mean, we're talking like molecular stuff. They're deconstructing foams, putting it on top. They're doing microgreens on all that. And that's wonderful. And I love that as well. But they're very different. And it really depends on where you're at and what you're looking for. So once again, the diplomat, I'm not going to answer your question, but there's a lot out there to try.
All right, dude. What are you drinking? What are you excited about these days?
Great question. Okay. So I'm pretty simple. I love Negronis. I love Manhattans. I'm a spirit forward kind of guy. That's just where I live. So Ricea, I have a bottle of Ricea in a back bar that I'm absolutely in love with right now. Let me see if I can grab it. So we have,
here you go,
Atarea. It is a micro distillery down in Mexico, and they do a phenomenal job. So Ricillas are definitely something I'm gravitating towards recently. There's a really cool craft distillery in Kansas City that makes a fantastic whiskey called Pendergast. Beautiful bottling, great whiskey. Really, really love that. So talls are hitting really big. Always Mezcal. This one's an Espadin from Hedonistas. But they also have a really delicious, I hope I didn't drink it all, but they have a delicious.
Here, this is what I'll do. Hey, did our friend Scott Wishart of Scott and Scott's Mini Woodshop come to your house and drink all your stuff too? Because that's what he does here.
He's welcome over anytime, man. That's for sure. More the merrier, in my opinion.
Nah, he's a good guy, and I like to tease with him. But we all have those. No, he's a good friend, and I'm so glad. I tell people, come to the house, because if you don't drink it, we can't do it in one lifetime. So it's okay.
Right, exactly.
What's fun here, Chris, is for us is this conversation today, right now, about what's exciting you and what you're using. In 12 months from now, there might be some new things on the scene that are just and like you said, these craft regional based. You've never heard of it. They've scratched the surface and found this recipe, or somebody's aunt, uncle, brother was making it, and we found this, and holy cow, where's this been all our lives?
Right. Yep. Yeah. There's a lot of examples like that. I mean, Mezcal in general is that, right? It is a regional based spirit that is steeped in history. Like, these are 400, sometimes a couple hundred year old spirits that are just tied to the community, and they are expressions of where they come from. And that's really cool to me. And, you know, I think there's a level of respect that you have to give a bottle like that. Same thing with Chartreuse, just steeped in history. And I love the world of history and how it kind of intersects with the world of spirits. Just quick segue, I know one of my favorite stories about the world of spirits is that is where IndyCars come from. That's the whole nexus and the beginning of IndyCar was spirit running. They were running spirits through the woods. And in order to get better at outrunning the cops, they would practice in the woods at night. And so fast forward 50 years later, here we are, 80 years later, here we are. And it's absolutely incredible how something like that, that touches so many people in their daily lives, has that basis back in the world of spirits and, illicit booze. And it's just a really, and I mean, the characters that you see in IndyCar are very much can embody that whole history as well, which is pretty fun.
Yeah. A lot of these conversations we can have, many of them all find their history in some sort of spirit. I mean, you can go from the beginning of time all the way to now. Things that happened, things that didn't happen, could have all been wrapped around spirits. This is my thing, and we get to share it with our listeners and our community. You've got your community. This is my selfish time to ask my questions, and hopefully the questions I've asked have satisfied. But there's, Carlsbad, California. I know you got a bar there. It's exciting, and what you're providing to the community. Is there anything we haven't touched on today in the podcast? Anything you want listeners to know more about you or more about A Bar Above?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered it. We are very steeped in our community. We're very steeped in education. We're really steeped in customer service and providing the best tools, experiences for anybody that loves the world of cocktails. So if you're beginning or you're advanced, we are definitely a great place and a resource for you as well. I think there's a couple other things that I want to mention is, if you head on over for a website, I'll have to find the link for you, but I'll give it to you. We do have some free downloads. So if you go to abarabove.com/handbook, we have a free digital download that any of your listeners can download to kind of give, it's like a cheat sheet or a primer for the world of craft cocktails, what to buy, the reasons to buy it, and give you a really good starting point on that as well. So you can definitely head on over to abarabove.com/handbook. And I think the only other thing is, we mentioned this earlier, but I did a podcast for 8 years and I know what it is to run a podcast. So selfishly, the thing that I would love more than anything is for, if you are listening to this podcast right now, go over to Apple's, go over to iTunes, leave a review, leave a 5-star review. because I cannot tell you how valuable that is for content creators, and give some really specific feedback, what you love about this show. I know that goes a long way, especially when you are doing so much cool content and so much creative, that anybody listening to this podcast, it does mean a ton to leave those comments and reviews. So, you know, me selfishly and you know, any content creator, I know that that holds a lot of weight.
I appreciate that. I mean, I can't ask my mom to pretend to be so many people after time leaving 5-star reviews. And after a while, she just, you know, she stops cashing checks. So I, you know. No, I appreciate right. that from total strangers. We love that. And it's true. You know, the payment that we get is just somebody saying, hey, I really enjoyed it, leaving some feedback, just dropping some sort of DM or whatever. That's a lot of payment to know that we're on the right track and people enjoy it too. Chris, I am grateful for your time today. Thanks for being a friend of Fermented Adventure. Yeah, we hope to stop off at San Diego and make a little week out of it at your house, if that's okay, if Julia's okay with that. And listen to some 8-tracks and, you know, have some fun with cocktails.
Sign me up, man. That sounds great.
Have an awesome day. Thank you so much. Cheers.